You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 561, what John did over his summer vacation, and two more stories. We're back, and this is Features Editor John Gentile, and we'll be doing regular news next week. I'm just going to talk about my wild adventure at Punk Rock Bowling, and I think Em and Hallie have some stories to contribute as well. Em, do you have a good story, or at least a mediocre story for tonight's episode?
Mediocre!
All right. Hallie Bullitt, where are you on a scale of 1 to 10? What's your story ranking at?
I still haven't decided exactly which story I'm going to tell, but I don't know. But I don't know. I like my story. I've done stupid shit. I think I can come up with a fairly entertaining story.
All right. Fair enough. So listen, we've got three stories, and my story. Well, you can always reach the podcast at punknews.org, and I'll just get right into it. I got back from Punk Rock Bowling. I will say that the lineup this year was good, not as good as the last one. But that being said, personally, I probably had a crazier and more fun time than last time, although last time actually was very fun. My Punk Rock Bowling story started actually not last Friday, but the Friday before, when I went down to New Jersey to see Alice Cooper at Atlantic City. And Alice Cooper, like, that's kind of when my vacation sort of began. And Alice Cooper was awesome. Like, I got, like, three or four rows back. And usually I don't get, like, the super nice seats. But it was only just, like, $30 between, like, crappy seats and nice seats. So I got them. Alice comes out. He's sounding great. The stage setup this time is basically a rejiggered version of the last one. It's still in the, quote, Castle of Death or whatever. But now he was doing some more of the tracks from Detroit Stories, which is the new album. And he did get me about one half of the way through the concert. He did this song called "I'm Back," the man behind the mask, which was actually, like, I'm not a huge fan of the 80s Alice Cooper, but I do like the song "I'm Back," the man behind the mask, which is from, like, Jason 6 or Jason 5. And he's singing it, and while he's singing it, like, these two, like, not kids, like teenagers, run out on stage, and they're just, like, looking around, and they're taking pictures. I'm like, what is going on? And Alice, like looks at them, and looks weird, but he keeps singing "I'm Back," the man behind the mask. And then they climb up to the top of, like, the Castle of Death or whatever, and they're up there, and Jason Voorhees appears behind them and slits their throat. And I'm like, you got me, Alice, you got me. And it was pretty funny. Like, it was a total setup, and it was great. Honestly, I was standing so close that, like, something hit me. I'm like, I just got stung by a bee. And I looked at my crossed arms, and it was a guitar pick. And I don't really care about, like, that kind of stuff. But it was pretty cool to get an Alice Cooper guitar pick that says Alice Cooper on one side, and "We're Back" on the other side. I thought that was kind of cool.
That is awesome.
Alice sounded great. The set list was great. A lot of actually a lot of the stuff from the 80s, but it was sounding real good. And actually, they also did some rarities from the early 70s, like My Stars, which was really cool to hear live. And I was probably 8 feet away from him getting decapitated, and I still can't figure out how they did it. I mean, it is so cool. Like, actually, I sort of think I figured it out, but like, so they put him in the guillotine, then he's shaking around, and they put, why did they execute him this time? I'm trying to remember. Oh, that's right. He was going to chop up a baby, and then so they put him in the guillotine for trying to chop up a baby while he was singing the song Dead Babies. And he's like thrashing around, and they put him in the guillotine, and it comes down, and the head falls off. And that was that. And then they pull the head out of the basket, and that's obviously not his real head. But like, I'm like, damn, that's like so well done. And I think I figured out how it is, but it's really cool. The one concern that I had is it sounded really, really good. Hallie, while he was singing, often he had the microphone about 6 inches from his mouth. And now I've been to like punk shows where they like have the microphone in their mouth so you can hear it. Is it possible that a microphone would be sensitive enough to be here like at 6 inches from your mouth and you're like at a big show like that? Is that possible or have I been duped?
You know, what's weird is that I really do. I know the answer to this more when like for interviews where you're being where you're talking, you are supposed to have the mic more like 6 inches from your mouth. Like you're supposed to. OK, can you picture this? Put your thumb on your chin. And then, like, stick your pinky out. Like, you know the way we used to, like, pretend we were talking on the telephone when we were kids? Yeah. Back when phones were still phones?
Yeah, yeah.
You do that, like, kind of sticking out of your chin, and that's the distance the mic is supposed to be from your face. Now, for singing, I don't know. Yeah, I do feel like in the recording studio, that's kind of how far I would be from the mic. But, like, I don't know. No one teaches you what to do at live shows. At live shows, honestly, I would have to have the mic touching my mouth because I'd be looking down at my bass and I'd be looking out at the crowd. And if I didn't have the mic basically touching my mouth touching the mic, I would, like, I don't know how to explain. Like my head would like wander away too far away from the mic. Next thing I'd know, I'd be like 3 feet away from the mic without realizing it because I'm looking down at my hands or something. So I don't know, but I don't. So that in answer to your question, yeah, it's if that's what you're supposed to do in a recording setting and when you're in like talking, that's probably what you're supposed to do when you're singing.
Well, that makes me very – I was worried because, you know, Kiss famously does use backing tracks, and Alice was sounding real good. And I kept watching to see if it didn't match up, but I didn't catch it not matching up. And sometimes when he was speaking, you could hear P-pops, pop P's.
Yeah, yeah,
you know? Yeah, so
yeah.
I think I really didn't want to get bummed out, but I was paranoid, you know. But anyways, so Alice was great, and it looks like it's the real deal, so I'm very happy to hear that. Saturday and Sunday, I sold records down at the punk rock flea market in Philadelphia, and it was cool. I will say, man, the rapid popularity of records, though, has annoyed me a little bit. Now, I basically sell $3 records, and everybody – and I sell some like really, really expensive records, but like everyone wants – like. Clean, super premium, perfect records, you know, for $3. And like it's cool to have a nice clean record, but I've got records that look like they were run over by a lawnmower and play 100% fine. And I've got records that are brand new that skip. You know what I mean? Like, I think people are a little too sensitive with regards to, you know, especially if – anyways, so these kids come up to me, and this kid goes, do you have Aerosmith's Toys in the Attic? I'm like, yes, I do, $4. And he pulls it out, and he's a kid. He's probably about 14. And he's like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. He's got Aerosmith's Toys. Like, he's literally, like, dancing. And then he pulls it out, and listen, it's a $4 Aerosmith record. It plays fine, but it's been played since the 70s, you know, but it plays, you know. And this kid's like, you're trying to rip me off. You're trying to rip me off. He's like, is this going to play? It's got scratches. I'm like, what does it have scratches? You know, I'm listening, man. It's a $4 Aerosmith record. I don't know what you want me to tell you. And he's like, you're trying to rip me off. You're trying to rip me off. I'm like, dude, it's a $4 Aerosmith record, you know. And then he runs away, and then he comes back. Oh, and then he's like, you've got Dag Nasty on CD. No, he says, do you have Dag Nasty? I'm like, I've got it on CD. He's like, you've got – he starts dancing again. I have Dag Nasty on CD. But then he, like, puts it back and runs away. And then he comes back an hour later. He's like, you still have Dag Nasty on CD? I'm like, there it is, man, $3. And he like, calls someone, and his friend comes over, and he's like, you have Dag Nasty on CD? I'm like, there it is, man, $3. And the kid, like – give me $3, and they like four kids start like dancing like in a circle that they finally have Dag Nasty on CD, and I'm like, man, I wish a CD could make me that happy, but then I realized it can. So anyways, The first day there was this really annoying guy next to me. I'm not going to say this guy also sells records, and I've seen him around a couple of times. And honestly, like he got off on the wrong foot with me. He wears this goofy hat, and honestly, anybody wears a goofy hat, there's a great chance they're real goofy. You know what I mean? So he wears this goofy hat. And I was just talking to him. I'm like, yeah, man. I said, I think this was like a year and a half ago. I met him, or 2 years. I said, yeah, I booked World Inferno one. And he's like, they really screwed me over one time. They really effed me over. I hate that band. And I'm like, all right, man, whatever. And I'm like, listen, if you're dissing World Inferno, you're talking to the wrong guy. You know what I mean? So then I'm like, so I totally wrote the dude off. And sure enough, he's next to me. And he's like playing all these games. He's like, hey, do you mind if I put my records so you got a table, the parking space, then the table, you know? And he's like, well, you're not supposed to put your stuff next to the parking space. But he says, do you mind if I do? I say, no, man, I don't care. Go ahead. So then I put mine in my parking space. And he's like, well, I can't get through now. I'm like, well, that's your problem. Like, you're the one with the block your parking space. You know, I'm not going to let you block your parking space and me not, you know? And then, like, the guy, but then he was trying to be, like, friendly the whole time. And he's like, well, not like faux friendly, like the dude was really annoying me the whole time. And then like the next day he comes over and he's like, hey man, like how about you, if people come to your table, you'll tell them I've got the premium stuff and I'll tell them that you've got the cheap shit. And I'm thinking, don't call myself shit. You know, plus I got better records than you anyways. But like, I'm not gonna fight with the guy. So I said, yeah, whatever. You know, I didn't mean it. You know, but then also like some kid was asking about leftover crack because I had a leftover crack flyer. And the kid's like, is Sturgeon an asshole? And I said, no, Sturgeon's not an asshole. He's a very intelligent guy. And he's got a lot of problems, you know. And then – so then the guy to me says – he's like, I hate leftover crack. He's like, I was playing in Zounds. And I guess he did for like a day, you know, but he's not English, you know. And I'm like, all right, man. And he's like – and they took too long on the stage and we only got four songs. And I'm like, oh, so you don't like leftover crack? He's like, no, I hate them. I'm like, well, I wrote the book on them, man. You know what to say. So it was great. You know, I'm here to fire. So anyways, the dude was really annoying me. I'm sorry. Anyways, so then I get about an hour sleep, and then I fly out to L.A. for the Leftover Crack book release party in LBC, Long Beach. Woo-hoo! And I fly in, and then I get off the plane. I go to Ace Rental Car. I'm not going to drag it out. People, do not use Ace Rental Car. Ace Rental Car should be F-minus rental car. I was there for 2 hours, and I wanted to get a small – I mean, I already reserved a car, and I had a compact car. I'm there for 2 hours. They tried to bill me $500. When on Expedia, it was like $125. It was a whole thing. I get out the door for $250, and they said, oh, we don't have your car, but do you want this gigantic minivan? I'm like – fine, I just gotta get out of here because I literally got in at like 1 o'clock and I'm like plenty of time to get to the show, you know, and it's already like 4:30, you know, like oh my god, because I gotta go pick up the books at the book place. I'm in a miserable mood. I'm going through LA traffic, which honestly isn't. Everyone's like LA traffic. Maybe I just had like it's not that bad. Like there's a lot of cars and there's a lot of like lane changing. But it's not like San Francisco where you could be sitting on the 101 for an hour and a half. It's not like New York getting into Brooklyn where you might be sitting in for 2 hours. Like, I never was in the.
But in New York, there's like in New York and San Francisco, I don't know. There's like you can just like kind of choose to take public transportation and like not deal with the traffic. But in LA, you got like no effing choice, right? That's well, like saying, only option.
Well, that's true, but I'm saying everyone in L.A. is a wimp because it wasn't that bad. And everyone in L.A. should feel bad about saying L.A. traffic is the worst because it's not the worst. You know, it's not great, but it's doable. I was in the car for more than 45 minutes, and I went like 30 miles or so. You said, listen, you need to toughen up L.A., you know. So anyways, I'm in a miserable, miserable mood. I pick up the books. I'm in a miserable, miserable mood. I'm driving down to LBC from L.A., and then I stop at a taco truck, and I got some delicious tacos, and I was in a great mood. All of a sudden, I was in a great mood. I was so happy. I'm like, I'm driving down to LBC. I got these books. It's going to be the Leftover Crack Book Release Party. It's going to be a great time. So I get down to LBC, and Leftover Crack is there, and the lineup is Sturgeon, Brad, Sandra of World Inferno on bass, Donnie Morse of Rats in the Walls on drums. Who am I missing? Eve Minor of Eve Minor on keys, and Al of Cop Out on guitar. And so anyways, so I'm down there, we're setting this stuff up, and people show up, and the opening band is Slaughterhouse. And let me tell you, people, Slaughterhouse rocks, man. It's like first wave punk meets a little bit of goth meets post-punk. such an awesome band, real cool band, and they nailed it, and people loved it, and they were red. So anyway, the Leftover Crack comes out, and I'm like, well, you know, Leftover Crack might be terrible because sometimes they are, and it's a new lineup, and you know, they are in the middle of Discord right now, and I'm like, yeah, it's gonna be. And Leftover Crack comes out, and they killed it. Leftover Crack was on fire. Not only that, is that they've changed up the set list. There's a lot of new songs in the set list, and they, like, that's why Leftover Crack is Leftover Crack. Just when you think they're down and out, they come back and kill it. And what was really cool is Jesse Michaels was there for the whole show, and he was having a good time. I got to talk to him a little bit. And Jesse Michaels never stays at a whole show ever, and he was there from the beginning till the end, which was crazy. Monty Messick of DFL was there, which was rad. But maybe perhaps most special to me was Fiorna was there. People say, well, John, who's Fiorna? Fiorna, but before there was Leftover Crack, there was Choking Victim. Before there was Choking Victim, there was a band called No Commercial Value. No Commercial Value was Sturgeon, Alec, and a lady named, what the hell's her name? Olivia. Olivia is Fiorna. And so we invited Fiorna to come to the show because after No Commercial Value ended, which was like 1992, maybe 1993, Fiorna got into the hippie scene and the rave scene, and she hasn't been involved in the punk scene since. This was literally her first punk show in like 30 years or whatever. She comes, and she's pretty shy. I mean, she's a very nice person, but she's kind of shy, and she doesn't know anybody, you know what I mean? And so I'm talking to her a little bit. And anyways, Leftover Crack starts playing Polyamorous Viva Crack. War Story, and the song that's Pick It Up, but I forget the name. Maybe the song's Constructs. Anyways, those are all reworked No Commercial Value tracks. You should have seen her jaw drop when Leftover Crack was playing essentially No Commercial Value tracks. Like, she was delighted, like a child, and it was such a sweet moment. It was great. It was freaking awesome. The kids were into the show. It was crazy. And everyone had a great, I mean, honestly, it was about as prepped as it can get, man. I mean, it was wild. It was real cool. It was real cool.
Now, can I ask you? Did you ask Jesse Michaels what he thought of the Laura Jane Grace petition?
I did not. I didn't even. Honestly.
You didn't. You know what? I'm actually glad you didn't. I'm glad that if you had a chance to chit chat with Jesse Michaels, that you hopefully came up with better things to talk about than that.
Honestly, like, Jesse is the man. Jesse is the man. He's probably a genius. He's not a normal person, you know, much like Jello. When you're talking to Jello Biafra, you don't want to say things to upset Jello because it makes you feel bad. It's almost like you're upsetting it. You know what I mean? It's like Jello is so sensitive and so full of life. You don't want to cause any kind of unpleasantness. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so when I'm talking to Jesse, I don't want to bum him out. You know what I mean? I want Jesse to have fun and have a good time. You know what I mean? And so the answer is no, you know, We just rapped about stuff and Leftover Crack and books and that kind of a thing, you know.
I love it. And, you know, fucking awesome.
You know, I'm not his best friend. Not like we, you know, hung out the next day and went drag racing or something, you know. But we had a nice time. You know, Jesse is the man. Jesse is, and actually, I got a copy of Jesse's book, his split book with Sam McFeeters. If anybody hasn't read that yet, read Jesse's section. I haven't read the Sam McFeeters part yet, but Jesse's section is like fantastic. It's a really good book. So anyway, the Leftover Crack book release party, huge success. Everyone had a great time. Leftover Crack is one of the great. This is why the Leftover Crack, they come when you think it's over, when you think they're destroyed, they come back and are reborn yet again and nail it. Also, Sandra on bass. Sandra is literally the best person in the world to, quote, replace Alec. Alec has passed away. Sadly, RIP. You can't bring in Alec part two because that would be weird and rude to Alec. What you can do is bring in Sandra, who is elegant, who is a trained musician, who's an opera singer, but also has connections to Leftover Crack and the anarcho-punk scene. She is literally the best person for them to bring in, and she did an amazing job. And it was awesome. It was awesome. So the next day, I go to Amoeba Records. I'm there for like 4 hours. And the reason people think Amoeba is the greatest is because it is the greatest or one of the greatest. I mean, you're not going to find a whole bunch of rare vinyl scores there just because there's so many people there. But it's CDs after CDs after CDs. So much killer stuff. And though I did settle a long-lasting and if you guys want to jump in anytime, feel free to jump in. So about literally 13 years ago, I was at Mountain View Rasputin Records. And there was the Bauhaus' Go Away White record on the discount rack for $10. And I'm like, well, I don't need that because I've got the CD. And I've regretted it ever since because now it's like a $300 record. Well, they had it on the wall at Amoeba, but it wasn't $300. And the reason it wasn't is because it had slight marks that don't affect play. And everyone's like, oh, I can't have that. It's got a slight mark on it. You know, I'm like, give it to me, you know. And so I paid way less than $300 for a Bauhaus record that has escaped me for 13 to 14 years. And now I've got it, and I play it plays it perfectly. You can barely even see any marks on it. It's awesome. Amoeba Records rules. I finally got Psychic TV's Allegory and Self on CD. I got a Stevie Nicks CD. I got a Gwen Stefani CD. I got Harley and the Stimulators, Loud Fast Rules. I got you can buy most of these CDs on the internet, but if you buy every CD you want on the internet, you're going to be broke in a week. You know what I mean? But also, I got some rare stuff too. You know what I mean? So I was there for like 4 hours, and honestly, they were treating me kind of weird because I was there for that long. I think they thought I was trying to steal stuff or something, but I just wanted to go through everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Amoeba. Amoeba rules.
Then that can't be the first time they've had a collector just go in and just like pour over everything, right? That can't be that unusual at a place like Amoeba.
True. However, people that worked there while I was standing there, people kept like that worked there would come up next to me and like start like going through CDs right next to me. So, you know, I don't know. I can't blame them. I was probably looking pretty weird because I was in a state of euphoria. So I was probably like skipping up and down the aisle, you know, tra-la-la, you know. So listen, people, Amoeba's great, man. Great prices and an insane selection. Amoeba's great. I mean, yeah. It is one of the most famous record stores, but there's a reason for it. It's great. It's great. And so then I went to a place called Going Underground Records. No, I went to Headline Records first in LA. And I gotta say, man, how do you? I'm sure you've been to LA, right?
I've talked about Headline on the podcast.
I gotta say, man, LA was not what I thought it was going to be. Like, I thought LA was going to be like glitzy and glamorous. I'd see like Clark Gable walking down the street. LA is run down, man, and so is Hollywood.
Run down.
About 3 years ago, like all the indie punkers were moving to LA. Like, why? Why would anyone want to live there? Like, it's a total bummer. I'm sorry, but it is.
No, well, that's Hollywood. I mean, LA is so sprawling. You can't even describe LA as being one thing because it's like a million. You know, it'd be like trying to, you know, you've got neighborhoods that are, yeah, literally just like a total shit show, and then neighborhoods that are like the literally like the richest people in the country. So. But Hollywood, the last time I was there, and it was like pre-pandemic. I was there like 3 months before the pandemic hit, and LA, the Hollywood seemed to be going through a thing. There's just like tremendous sad amount of homelessness and really, really like really upsetting and grimy and super sketchy. And I can't even imagine. I would imagine that problem probably only got worse during the pandemic. But also, I don't know. I mean, I don't like to see homelessness at all. Don't get me wrong. But I also don't mind if a city has a little bit of grit. There's an okay amount of grit for a city to have. I don't want to be a city to be so gentrified that just everything's super expensive and squeaky clean either, you know?
There's like shantytown after shantytown. Yeah. Everything's got that coat of like dirt on it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, man, I don't know, man. I was bummed out by LA Hollywood. I'll tell you that. I remember when Ricky Frank was on the podcast, he'd be like, I hate LA. I hate LA. I'm like, Ricky, how dare you say that having never been to LA? I'm assuming LA is just like San Francisco circa 2009, which I loved. You know, I'm like, shut up, Ricky. LA is great. It's just south of San Francisco. I kind of feel where Ricky's coming from these days. You know?
Yeah, anyway. No, LA and San Francisco are nothing alike, but I think LA is cool. We can talk more about LA another time. I think LA is cool. I don't want to live there, but I think LA is kind of rad.
Fair enough. So I go to Headline Records. I got to say, man, location of the very first Leftover Crack show, not thrilled by Headline. I mean, they had a lot of CDs, which was cool. Nothing mind-blowing. Not that many records. A lot of bootleg shirts up there on the shelves. And the weird thing was, while I was there, like three people came and say, okay, I'll take one Cox Bar shirt, one Dead Kennedy shirt, and one Black Flag shirt. Like almost like okay, I'll take a pound of sugar, 2 pounds of rice. It was like weird. I'm like, people just come in to place orders, and he like pull them off the wall, and he's like, here you go, you know. So I don't know, man. I thought if you're in LA, you should definitely hit it up because it is a famous landmark, and he's got some cool stuff. But I was not a fan of all the bootleg stuff on the wall for sure. Actually, while I was there, he placed a bootleg order for one of my client's shirts.
Oh brother.
Yeah, like, oh no.
So I'm definitely not a fan. So anyways, so then I go to Going Underground Records, small record shop, pretty cool, not a crazy amount of stuff, but good prices and some rare stuff. So definitely check out Going Underground Records. And then lastly, I went to this place called, I forgot the name of it. It's Record Parlor. What do you think they were charging for a regular copy of Elton John's Rock of the Westies?
$45.
What do you think, Hallie?
No, I have no idea.
$26. That's a $1 to $3 record. Like every record when there was like $26. I'm like, how is this guy staying in business? But I mean, there was nobody else in there, so I don't know, So I can't recommend Record Parlor. I definitely can recommend eMedia. So anyway, the next day I wake up and I go down to Fullerton. First place I hit up is Radiation Records, one of the most famous record stores in the United States. Radiation Records. A ton of records and a ton of rare records. What I will say, though, the rare, unlike Amoeba, where they'll have a rare record and it's priced so you can't let it go. You're like, I'm not going to get, you know, Bauhaus's Go Away White for $50 again, so I got to get it. You know, it's $150 or $300 on the internet. It's $50 here. I'm taking it, you know. Where at Radiation, who sells a ton of stuff online, the prices were about what they were on Discog. So I guess if it's your local record store, it's like super awesome because they're getting all the latest punk records. They got a lot of rare stuff. But if you're like visiting, like they had some rudimentary Peni records, but like I could just buy them on Discogs if I wanted to pay that much money for them. So I mean, it was cool and it's a good store. I just, you know, I wasn't compelled to buy much. I did get some stuff, but I wasn't compelled to buy stuff just because the prices seemed to be standard market rate. So if I can buy it anywhere, anytime at that price, why buy it here? But if it's your local record store, you know, and you want to get like the new punk records that are just coming out, it's real cool. I probably shouldn't talk about this. I went to White Rabbit Records, which used to be Burger Records. Depressing, man. Depressing. Oh my God. There was like nothing on the shelves. Like it was still open. There's like nothing on the shelves. The dude working behind the counter was like kind of weird and like it looked pretty pricey. And then I say to the guy, because in the whole burger scandal, the guy Lee was accused of some things, but the guy Sean wasn't. And I felt bad for the guy Sean because it appeared that he was clean. I don't know that, but it appeared that he was clean. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, is like Sean around? Because I want to say hi to him. And like he couldn't answer when he was going to be in. And I'm like, all right, man, I'll see you later. So but the room was like, it was like stale air. Like it was much smaller than I thought. I thought Burger Records was like a big building. It's like the size of an apartment building. It's like really small. Like I'm amazed that like so much like shows and stuff happened there. It's relatively tiny, you know. It was depressing. What can I say, you know? And so then the next day I flew out to Las Vegas. The first thing I did was I caught the I flew out to Las Vegas and I stay at El Cortez. And listen, people, I'm not getting paid by El Cortez, but I love El Cortez. It is my hotel of choice. And El Cortez, the tower, people, I'm telling you, it's on punk rock bowling is on the old strip. It's held by the Golden Nugget, which we'll call the North End. I don't know if that is the North End or whatever, but it's the North-ish end. El Cortez is the South End, and it's about a 5-block difference. Or maybe 4-block difference. And El Cortez, like if you get the tower, you can look out on the old strip. 3 out of the 5 after show venues are literally right next to El Cortez, like across the street. There's 2 across the street and 1 across another street. El Cortez is the place to be, man. The rooms are super nice. It's super cheap. I love El Cortez. And there's something fun about like getting out of the elevator and you're in a casino, even though I don't gamble, and you walk out onto the old strip. And like, Hallie, have you ever been to the old strip in Las Vegas?
Yeah.
Man, I love – I mean, the main strip is fine, but the old strip, it's like a part. It's like a boardwalk times 3, man. It's a party.
It's definitely way more punk. It's just – yeah, that's like the punk part of town.
There's people getting drunk. There's people blowing air horns. And yeah. Normally that stuff would annoy me, but I don't know why. I love it at doing punk rock bowling. The street performers, some of which are really amazing, some of which are just really annoying, and some of which are really sad, honestly. Like – there's this old lady who's probably, I don't know, 80, and when you're 80, your body is not in the best shape when you're like 25, right? And so she sits in a chair topless and has to sign this retired stripper, and it's like really depressing, you know, but people give her money, you know. But on the other hand, like there was this amazing gymnastics guy that was doing a handstand for like a half hour and like moving his legs around in the air like for a half hour, you know. So it's cool, man. Also, there's a Mexican place like on the old strip, which is absolutely delicious. Go there. It's great. But anyway, El Cortez, man. I'm not getting paid, but I love El. It is the place to be, man. I love El Cortez. Most people go to Golden Nugget or Downtown Graham. El Cortez. And I shouldn't even tell you, because that's probably going to raise the rates. But listen, that's how much I love El Cortez, man. It's great. I love El Cortez. So anyways, plus they give you like a free voucher. And but I forgot to cash it in. I think I threw away like $20. Anyways, plus they have Conan the Barbarian slot machine, which I lost $2 on and then quit. So anyways, so the first time I get there, I go see Angry Samoans, which actually wasn't Angry Samoans. It was Angry Samoan, which was just the drummer from Angry Samoans. It was fine. Then I went and saw Fear. That same night, I ran over right next to El Cortez and saw Fear. Lee Ving is the man. I mean, he's still Lee Ving. Fear rocked. It was great. That's Thursday night. So I go to sleep. I wake up. The next morning is Friday. I go to Zia Records, fantastic record store in Las Vegas. There's two Zia Records. There's Zia Records Rainbow and Zia Records East. Zia Records East, I think, is the better one. That's the one that's in like – yeah, it's – I don't know. I think they're both pretty good, but tons of cool CDs. And usually Zia Records doesn't have that many great records, but I actually did get a couple of really cool records. I got – what did I get? I know I got a Spitz record, and I got another like record. I was really surprised that I got Sloppy Seconds record and some other really cool stuff, man. So Zia Records, definitely hit up when you're in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. And then so anyways, then I go to Punk Rock Bowling proper because it's now open. Let's see. Oh, listen, I forgot my intro spiel. Listen, Hallie and Em, I think I might have an anger problem, like for real. So you guys tell me if I've got an anger problem or not. Like for real, I'll tell you why in a minute. So anyways, the other nice thing about El Cortez is, like, honestly, at Punk Rock Bowling, you're going to be taking – I mean, if you're any semblance of a human, you're going to be taking 2 to 3 showers a day because it's hot, it's sweaty. And between main Punk Rock Bowling, you kind of want to sneak in a 20-minute shower before the after shows because you've been kicking it for 12 hours, you know, and you've got 5 more hours to go. So you kind of want to, like, you know, spruce up a little bit. You know what I mean? So El Cortez, prime location. So anyways, I go to Punk Rock Bowling. Let's see here. The first thing I caught was the darts. Darts are really, really cool. Darts were really, really cool. Doing their thing, and they were good. The nice whole bad cop was very cool as well. After that, I caught FYP. FYP, I'd never seen FYP. I like FYP a lot and Todd, but they were actually like really, really good live. They're kind of like a halfway between like old school punk and kind of like 90s pop punk. Hallie, you know about FYP, right?
Yeah, and I would love to see FYP live. I mean, I've seen like all of Todd's newer bands, but I got into FYP like after they were already not playing anymore. So that's pretty fucking cool that you saw them. I like that.
Also, Todd looks surprised. Todd looks like he's about 35, but I'm pretty sure he's like 55 or 50.
I think he's got to be 50.
So I mean, Todd's looking good, man, and honestly they are kicking ass. And what was surprising about FYP is all the songs are pretty fast and pretty short, and honestly, like on a big stage that tends to not work, but for FYP it did. People were loving it and it was sounding great. FYP was great. Then I saw the Dwarves. One of the heavy hitting sets of the festival. They came out, they did Strictly Hits. You know, they were sounding good. They were sounding clean. They were smashing it out. Dwarves sounded so good. It was an amazing set. Dwarves always come to battle at festivals, and they battled, and it was great. After that, I kind of cooled out for a while because, you know, Menzingers and Frank Turner. People loved Frank Turner. Oh, no, I saw the Queers. Queers were cool, too. Actually, I just saw the Queers like 3 weeks ago, but the Queers were actually really good. People were into it. They did the Queers set, a lot of short, fast songs. Kind of Ramon style, people dug it. Then I cooled out, and then I saw people loved Frank. I was bored by Frank Turner, but people loved him, so I guess if you like it, you like it. If you don't, you don't, you know. Then I saw Descendants. I love the Descendants' first album. I don't love it much after that, and I've seen the Descendants 3 times before, and I like it, but I'm like, I don't really need to hear these songs. For some reason, I don't know if it was me, if it was them, the Descendants were on fire. I was captivated the entire set. Without question, the best Descendants that I've ever seen. And I love the whole thing. They were just sounding great, sounded good. And also, Milo had like a water bottle with him, but he had it wrapped around him like an ammo belt. You know, so he had like his water bottle. Like
gotta stay hydrated, man.
Randall would have like a machine gun like under his arm, and that's when Milo had like a water bottle. He would pull it out and drink it and put it back. It was cool, you know. Awesome. To answer the question, you know, Descendants had put out that retro record, and the question, well, who's going to be the Descendants? Answer: it was classic. I mean, it's modern Descendants: Milo, Bill Stevenson, Carl, and Stephen Egerton. But they did do songs from that new record, which are old songs from before the first album. They were great. Then I ran on down to the new venue, the Place on 7th, to see Lunatics. Place on 7th is the new, venue after part of your punk rock bowling. It's awesome. It's actually inside, but it's an outdoor stage. Great feeling, great sound. I caught Dog Party. Oh, actually, this was cool. So I was with Monty Messix, and I said, Monty, let's go see Lunatics. He's like, I don't have a ticket. I'm like, I'll figure it out, man. For some reason, I was getting too big for my britches because I was feeling real good about the Leftover Crack Book release show, you know. Oh, and also, a lot of people, both in L.A. and in Las Vegas, said hi and talked about the Punk News podcast, and both M, Hallie, and Sam all got compliments. Thanks to Chris, other Chris, a guy named Bill, a guy named McKay, a guy named Mike, and everyone else that came and said hi. I appreciate that. It was real cool. So honestly, like, I shouldn't let the ego get the best of me, but I'm feeling kind of like a big shot. You know what I mean? Like, you know, oh, I just had a book release show. It was rad. People are loving the book. People are saying hi to me. You know, like, I'm Mr. Punk Rock.
Yeah, that's, you know, awesome.
So Monty's like, I'm hanging out with Monty Messix from DFL, and Monty's like, I don't think I can get in. I'm like, Monty, I'll get you in, man. And so we go down to Lunatics, and so I say, I'm like, can Monty get in? And they're like, no. But the guy next to me says, hey, I've got – he's talking – like, he doesn't realize I'm talking to the bouncer. He's talking to the ticket person. He's like, I've got an extra ticket. You know where I can sell it? I say, yo, man, I'll buy it right here. What do you want for it? He's like, buy me a beer. I'm like, done. So I'm like, Monty, you're coming on in. And so I bought the guy a beer, and Monty came on in. And it was totally rad. However, Monty was playing with DFL the next night, and Monty was – I don't think I'm talking about this. Monty was a little nervous because DFL hasn't played out of California for a while. It's a different audience, and he was playing first on the Madball bill. So he wasn't sure if people were going to be there. We walk into the Place on 7th. Nobody is in there. No, there's like seven people watching the stage. You know what I mean? And I could see Monty was like, oh my God, we came all the way out here to play to seven people. You know what I mean? And so Monty's like, oh, I'm tired. I'm going to go. I'm like, all right, that's cool, man. That's cool. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I hung around. Dog Party comes out. By the time Dog Party came out, the place was about half to three quarters full. Dog Party was sounding great. I love Dog Party. They're like 25 now, but to me, they'll always be 12. You know, I'm like, there's Dog Party, you know? And they were great. They played a bunch of new songs. They were really awesome. Mean Jeans comes out. Mean Jeans always kills. I don't know if Mean Jeans has a skit, or if they're on stage, silly things are really impromptu. They feel like they're impromptu. You know what I mean? But they're so good, I almost feel like they have to be pre-written. But, like, Mean Jeans is always a blast on stage.
I think they're just funny, right? They're just really legit funny.
Like, one of them said, okay, we're going to play some good songs in a little bit, but before that, here's this song. Which is, like, a funny thing. like we should have practiced. Like the whole night they were, like, just cracking these hilarious jokes. And they're awesome. Like, Mean Jeans are awesome, man. They really are. I didn't know that much about Lunatics. Lunatics came out. Lunatics blew my mind. I thought Lunatics were kind of like L7 or Bratmobile, and they sort of are, but they're almost like Gwar, and that they have like these costumes and they have like personas on stage, and their songs like constantly are like changing mid-song, and I didn't know. It was like their first performance in like 19 years. They are an awesome, awesome live band. Like, everyone's got to go see them. Lunatics were definitely one of my surprise whammies. Like, I was like, wow. I actually had to go meet somebody, and I didn't want to leave. I'm like, I'll just stay for one more song. And I stayed for the whole set because they were so good. Like, Lunatics, they're funny, but they're serious, and they rock, and they're great. Lunatics rule.
I love that because they were so good back in the day. But the fact that after such a long break, they were able to like come out swinging. I mean, I honestly would expect no less. They were just like tremendous, tremendous performers like back in the day. So, I'm not surprised, but like you're always relieved to hear that the bands you loved back then, like when they come back, you're always a little relieved to hear that they were in fact like that they did bring the heat, you know?
They did. Like I didn't realize they wore like costumes and stuff. Back in the day, did they wear like costumes and stuff?
Yeah, like it was like a, there was definitely like a, you know, I wouldn't say like, was it costumes or more of just like a Riot Girl thing, like really, really, they had like a really cartoonish
look, right?
Like really bright colors and like, you know, just, yeah, just really making a, making a statement.
Honestly, that was a set where I become a lifelong fan based off that one set. Like, they were awesome. So anyway, I crash out the next morning. I go to the other Zia Records. I get some cool stuff. And then I'm trying to think. Yeah, so I think I must have went to the, okay. So So actually, I'm walking up the street and I run into Jeff of Crazy in the Brains, who were in town that night to play a set. And so Jeff and I walked around the old strip, and you know, we had a good time. We were just hanging out. And then I went up to the before the actual festival started, I went up to the Citrus deck. Honestly, I've talked about how punk music has had some frustrations with punk rock bowling, and that we used to be sponsors and they kind of were kind of trying to push us around, and I wasn't cool with it. But that's all true. But honestly, like, punk rock bowling might be the best festival just because they've got all these extra things, the after shows, the pool. Listen, people, if you go to punk rock bowling, they've got like four or five pool parties throughout the thing. The pool parties are such an amazing – it's like a legit pool party. Like, I've talked about on the podcast before. Like, if you watch, like, American Pie, they have, like, these crazy parties with the Red Solo Cup where everyone's, like, has their arms in the air and they're dancing and going, woo! Like, I've never known a party like that ever, you know. And it's that party. Like, there's, like, literally 300 people there. People are dancing, having fun. There's Guttermouth, who I don't even love, but it was rad that they were there. People are splashing in the pool. I wouldn't get in the pool, mind you, but I'm glad people were in the pool. And it was just – It was a literal pool party, and it was a totally rad vibe. Like, it was just awesome. Like, everyone's in a good mood. Everyone's having fun. It is a rad scene, you know. So then I headed on down to the festival proper, and let's see, who did I see first? I saw Decent Criminal. Decent Criminal was real cool. They played a good. I saw Side Eyes. Side Eyes is Astrid McDonald, son of Jeff McDonald of Red Cross, niece of Stephen McDonald of Red Cross and Melvins. Side Eyes kicked ass. I'm glad I went, even though I had to hang around for a long, long time afterwards. They were great. They sounded great. That was awesome. Here's where my first anger issue comes into play. So anyways, I got time to kill, and honestly, like I used to never put on sunscreen because I hate it. I hate the smell. I hate the stickiness. But about 4 or 5 months ago at the punk rock flea market, I got burnt so bad. Second worst time I ever burnt. I'm like, listen, man, you just got to man up and start using sunscreen. You know what I mean? It's like I can't. How many times can I dance with the devil? You know what I mean? So I bought SPF 100. You know, like, I didn't know they sold that. I'm like, yes, SPF, like, only 100. And so I put it on, and honestly, I'm really glad I did, because I didn't get sunburned at all, and I get sunburned so easily. So I've got it on, but the problem is it comes from, like, it washes from your forehead down into your eyes, so it's getting in my eyes. And the stronger the SPF is, the worse it is in your eyes. And so I was like in pain. You know what I mean? Like, and I forgot. Damn it, I gotta rewind. Back when I was in LA, there's a taco truck. I go to this taco truck, and I know, like most taco trucks in LA, it's people from all over, you know, all types of all backgrounds, right? But this taco truck was just people who appeared to be Mexican. I'm like, ooh, authentic, you know? So I get in line, and they don't even speak English, which, fair enough. With my very rudimentary Spanish skills, I was able to order three things that I think were tacos, and they've got the sauces. They've got the light red sauce, the dark red sauce, and the green sauce. And I'm like, oh, okay. The light red sauce, that's the one that's kind of mild. It's not that hot. I'll take that. I put it on my taco. Oh, my God. I was in intense pain for a half hour. Snot was coming out of my nose. It was burning my lip. My tears were coming out of my eyes. It was burning my cheeks. There was a dollar store. I'm like, I'll go into the dollar store and I'll buy a towel and milk. I had to put the mask over my face. My breath is burning my face. That's, I go into the dollar store. I'm crying in the face. I get the milk. I get the towel. I get outside. I literally just sat in my car and died for a half hour. It was brutal. Then there's another taco truck down the street. And so I go there, and there's like 75 people. Like, this is the taco truck. There's like 75 people there, you know. And so, like, people – but – next to the taco truck on the sidewalk is another guy. So I get a taco. I'm like, oh man, like sometimes like at least in San Jose, like Mexican guys or Mexican American guys will like sell fruit in like cups, you know, and they give you, it'll be like cantaloupe and honeydew and stuff. I'm like, oh, I bet he's selling fruit. I'll get that as a dessert. Nobody's at this guy's tent. Nobody. I feel bad for the dude. Like he's there with his wife. Nobody, everyone's at the taco truck. Nobody's at the dude's tent. So I'm like, well, I'll go buy some fruit as a dessert. So I go over and I'm like, what do you got here? He goes, crepes. I'm like, crepes. You know, but I couldn't walk away because I'm like, no one had been there all night. And I'm the only person there. And I'm like, I'll take a crepe. And he's like, what kind do you want? And I'm like, give me the best one. So he gives me a crepe. And I'm like, thanks. And it's like nine. I'm already full, mind you. But I'm like, well, I felt bad. Like no one was buying this dude's stuff. So I take the crepe. I walk up the block. I've only had like four crepes in my life. But still, without question, it was the most delicious crepe I've ever had. It was like an amazing crepe, people. And so I was so good. I went back and I told the guy how good the crepe was, you know. And he's like, thanks. You know, I'm like, that's a good crepe, man. But honestly, I think his business plan is bad. Like who's like out? Like it was in front of like a Payless shoe store. So who's buying a crepe outside like the Payless shoe store? You know what I mean? Like I think he had a great product, but a bad business plan. You know what I mean? So, but hold on a second. I'm going to tell you exactly where to find this dude. Cause if you're out there, you should stop and get one of his crepes. Hold on a second. Give me one. Here we go. If you are on near 153, hold on a second. I'll tell you. If you were at the intersection, oh shit. If you were at the
what is he moving? Is he like currently driving around? You can't like zero in on his location.
Here, I'm gonna tell you where this dude is, man. You people have got to get this dude's crepes, man. All right, here we are. If you were at the intersection of Little Armenia, that's not a road, that's a place. If you're near Little Armenia on Sunset Boulevard and Western Avenue, get that dude's crepes, man. That dude is the crepe man, I'm telling you. Like it's an amazing crepe. So anyways, back to LA. I mean Las Vegas. So the sunscreen is dripping into my eyes and my eyes are on fire. I'm literally crying because it's so painful. It looks like I'm in seventh grade and just got dumped for the first time. You know what I mean? And I'm in bad shape. So I'm going to like the water stand and the soda stand. I'm like, can I buy a bottle of water and have a napkin? And they're like, we only got bottles of water, no napkins. So I go to another place. I'm like, can I have a soda and a napkin? Like, we only got a soda, no napkin. You know, I'm like, oh, God, I need a piece of paper. Like, I'm dying here, you know. So I go to, like, four places. And I'm in pain. I can barely see. I make my way to the food truck area, right? And I'm like, fine. Honestly, the cool thing about punk rock bowling is I literally don't eat from when I wake up at about 10 a.m., all the way till about 2 a.m., and then I go get my Mexican place. Like you, for some reason, the punk rock bowling, you don't feel like eating, which is good. You know, it can't hurt me. So anyways, so I go to the food truck place. It's like 5 p.m. I'm like, fine, I'll get like a sandwich or something, and then I'll get a napkin, you know. So I go up to this food truck, one of the food trucks, and there's about 10 food trucks at punk rock bowling, and they all have, like, you know how food trucks are. They each have like seven signs, you know, like, you know, bowl of soup or, you know, a hot dog or whatever, you know what I mean? And so this place has got like seven signs, and they've got like a sandwich called like the Jimmy or something. And I literally say, may I please have a Jimmy? And she says, what do you say? And I said, and I pointed to the sign with my hand. I said, the sandwich, the Jimmy sandwich. May I please have a Jimmy sandwich? And then she says to me, what did you say, motherfucker? And I'm like, what? This was not my proudest moment. I said, what, motherfucker? Fuck you, you fucking bitch. And then she goes like takes a step back. And she's like, what did you say to me? I said, fuck you, motherfucker, which isn't as strong against a woman. And I wish, like, I hate using the F word. I hate it. It wasn't my finest moment. But I'm like, she just called me an MF-er. And she's mad that I'm saying the same. I have no idea what's going on. I'm like, why is they calling me an MF-er? I literally said twice, may I please have a sandwich? Like, please. I said, please. You know? And then she's like, what's your effing problem? And I'm like, I was not rude to you. You know, F you. And then I kind of like stomped off. She says, like, somebody needs to call security. I'm like, F you. And I kind of stormed off. As I was storming off, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a sign. And I saw just a glimpse of the sign. And I saw the words, like, E-R-F-U-C-K-E-R, handwritten on the sign and some other words. And I think, and I don't know, if somebody else was there can tell me, I think, like, their joke is when you go up there, instead of saying please, you have to say MF-er, which I don't approve of at all. I think it's very low brow. Like, but I think that's funny, you know? Mm.
Yeah, so she it was like, was it, Sumi, you think it was like part of like the shtick?
I don't know that. I mean, honestly, I ran away because like if this all happened, it's been like 8 seconds. I didn't want to be like on someone's cell phone because they always show the second half of the conflict and not the first half. So like, you know, enraged punk news guys called them a bitch. You know, they're like, oh my God, you know. And so I think the shtick is you have to say MF or to order something, which I if I knew that, I wouldn't have done that.
Did she seem legit angry or did she seem like she was joking? Well,
when I called her a bitch, she got angry.
This is so confusing. Well, yeah, duh, yeah. John.
What'd you call me an MF for? I'm in eye pain, and I'm like, man, please have a sandwich, and she calls me an MF for. I'm like, what is going on? You know? And so I think you're supposed to, like, say MF for when you order or something. But, like, honestly, that's a terrible business plan, and they should definitely be prepared if people are taken aback when they call you an MF-er, and, you know, especially in punk rock bowling where there's literally 150-plus signs all over the place, you know. Anyways, maybe I was the bad guy. I don't know, you know. I found a napkin on the ground.
I would say she either misunderstood you and thought you were saying something offensive to her, which is, like, maybe she needs to get her hearing checked, but, like, doesn't make her a bad person, or there is some weird thing where they decide to call their customers motherfuckers. But I mean, I don't know. I would maybe not call a person a bitch in the future. But I can be the same way, John, in that I if something is really frustrating and like pissing me off in the moment, like I will curse at people in public. Like I definitely will. So it's not that I don't, I definitely understand the impulse. Like I can definitely go there.
I will agree that I shouldn't have called her a bitch. I didn't even mean to. Like, it just shot out of me because she's calling me an MF-er. Yeah. My eyes are on fire, and I'm calling her an MF-er, but it's not hurting her because calling a woman an MF-er isn't the same as calling a man an MF-er. So I'm like, how can I hurt her? I'll call her a bitch, you know? And it's like, you know, and she was really taken aback. And I'm like, I have no idea what's going on here, you know? So I don't know. Maybe I do have an anger problem because we got a couple other issues coming up too. You know what I mean?
You're like having such a good time. Like everything you've said is like you're having this like dreamy week, but I guess it was the eye pain and the super super hot tacos.
Well,
maybe had you feeling a little on edge.
Well, see that's what like I guess I was on edge cause of the eye pain. But I do hate rudeness. I really do. You know, and I was so polite to her. I said, "May I please have twice?" You know, she called me an MF-er. I'm like, what? And also, it's hot. So I'm not saying I was in the right. You know, I'm telling you what happened. And listen, people, I'll try to do better. You know, she definitely should have called me an MF-er, or she should have like tapped the sign. You know, or been prepared for my reaction. You know, but like, you know, I was caught off. I'm not ashamed, but I could have handled it. What I should have done is take a step back and said, "Pardon me, madam. I don't speak to people that way." That's what I should have done. You know what I mean? But I was blindsided. You know.
So but anyways. How often when something goes wrong in public like that, do you just wander away and then just like replay the scenario in your head over and over and over again? And you're like, oh, there's like so many other ways I could have handled that. That would have been not only like that would in the end would have just I'll replay the scenario and just be like, I could have done this in a way that would have been just ended up being less stressful for me because like when I end up cursing at people in public, I never feel good about it afterwards. Like, you know, like maybe in that moment I feel good that I just like released that bad feeling. But like then I always walk away feeling like, oh man, like why couldn't I have just like kept my cool, been like too cool to like let people ruffle my feathers. You know, it's like,
like I was having a great time, but I should be, like nothing should bother me because I'm having like the time of my life. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I guess it was the eye pain. I was caught off guard. You know, I don't know, man. I listen, it wasn't my finest moment. So anyways, I saw Youth Brigade. It was fine. And then Leftover Crack played. I'm like, oh, I wonder if they're going to be, you know, really good or not. And so I go way up to the front of the stage and I've got a Circle Jerks t-shirt on my shoulder and I've got a Side Eye 7-inch in my hand. Honestly, always a bad plan. I wasn't in the pit, but I was close to the pit. I shouldn't have had anything in my hand close to the pit. Always a bad idea. You know what I mean? Leftover Crack comes out and Leftover Crack is on fire again. They are, and honestly, like, we really shouldn't. I mean, and it's always me that brings up. We should never talk about the commenters because the commenters are so not reality. If you looked at Leftover Crack in the comments, you think everyone in the world hates Leftover Crack. 16,000 people were so into Leftover Crack. I think people wanted Leftover Crack to win. Yeah. Like people were so because. Thanks to Architects of Self-Destruction. People know that Leftover Crack has been going through a rocky period. And I think people wanted them to win, you know, and Leftover Crack came out and they were on point, on fire. They killed it. Leftover Crack is an amazing band because they've got such a sonic dynamic, but also an emotional dynamic. Some songs are funny, some songs are angry, some songs are very sad. And like actually midway through the set, they did You Can't Go Home and You Can't Play Here, and behind them they had different pictures of Alec Bailey, who passed away, who was the bass player, while they played, and it was super emotional. And the trippy part was the sun set during that song. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
So Leftover Crack was on fire, and then near the end of the set, I'm up there, I'm watching, I'm having a great time, and here's anger issue number two. I get smashed in the head so incredibly hard, I get knocked down, right? And I get kicked in the back of the head, right? And I and anyone there, it was literally the hardest I've ever been hit, including rugby. Like, it was the hardest I've ever been hit, you know? I get knocked down, I jump back up, and I turn around. And actually, when I got hit, I said, F! Like, I hate using that word, but, like, it had come undone. Like it was just a reaction, you know? So I get back up, and there's this drunk, well, not drunk, but this asshole-looking street punk guy who's way too tall to be crowd surfing. And you shouldn't crowd surf from the back, from the front to the back, not the back to the front. So he, like, booted me in the head, you know what I mean? And so I grab, he's on the ground, I grab him, I pick him up, and I'm as I'm picking him up, like, instead of just like shrugging his shoulders, like, oh, I'm sorry, like, he gives me, like, this, like, you know, drunk street punk smirk, right? And I'm like, I'm gonna fucking thrash this guy, you know what I mean? And the fact that he's not hitting me means he's not a badass. And I know I'm not a badass, but he's not really doing anything except for, like, shrugging and smirking, so I know I'm gonna kill him, you know what I mean? And this is literally, like, 3 seconds. Like, a fist fight is literally, like, 3 to 5 seconds. And while I'm picking him up, I say to myself, dude, what's your exit plan here? Like, you should be having the time of your life. And this is on, like, 1 second. Leftover Crack is playing. Your book just came out. If you smash this guy, what, are you going to walk away? You know, are you going to get hassled by security? Like, what are you going to do? And I'm like, oh, my God. Yeah, like, what am I going to do here? So I kind of just started shaking him because I didn't know what to do. You know, I didn't want to just, like, let him go because then he might hit me. So I kind of was, like, shaking him to, like unnerve him but not hurt him. You know what I mean? And then, like, and then I eventually let people are, like, tapping me on the, they're like, let him go, man, let him go. And I let him go. And of course, he starts, you know, like crowd surfing again. And I turn around and the security guard is, like, giving me, like, a thumbs up, like, you did a good job or something. And then, like, people are talking to me, they're like, man, like, that's cool, man. You're just taking it. Like, people are, like, consoling me, I guess. I guess people saw I got, like, whacked in the head. You know what I mean? And yeah. So this one guy comes up to me and he's like, yo, are you blue collar? And I didn't, like, answer. And he says to me, dude, are you blue collar? And I'm like, I'm still, like, my head's like, my bell is still rung. I'm like, not really. He's like, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. And I'm like, I don't know what this guy's talking about. You know what I mean? So anyway, years ago when I was studying for the bar exam, a similar thing happening at the Melvins where this big dude pushed me. The crowd thought I was running into people. They pushed me back and I went back and I popped the guy in the face. And at a way oversold Melvin show, there was a 3-foot radius around me the whole time. So at the Leftover Crack show, there's this 3-foot radius around me, even though we're right near the pit. The band stops playing. It's the last song. Brad Logan points out at me. He's like, we got a book out. I wrote it with that guy right there, John. You know? And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's the guy that everyone's scared of.
So the band set is over. I go back. I go to the tent. I don't go in the tent. And I'm just watching people line up buying, you know, merch and the book. And like, honestly, like, I'm going to stop talking about the book pretty soon. But, like this, like, it's so hard to get a book published. It's even harder for a book to get published and to get good reviews. It's even harder for people to actually want to get it. You know what I mean? And there are lines of people, and I'm just trying to drink in as much as I can. Like, people buying my book right there. I'm, like, watching them buy my book, the T-shirt, the zine, and everything. About a half hour later, after Brad cools down, he comes out, and we go behind the counter and, like, sign books for 2 hours. And it was so – it was – one of the best experiences of my life. Like, it was so, and honestly, Brad was super cool because people don't know who I am, you know, but they're like, oh, Brad, we signed my book. And Brad would be like, hell yeah, man. And meanwhile, Brad's like the world's best salesman. Like, people come up to like, oh, I'll take the shoes, the kids, the school shirt. And Brad would be like, have you checked out the book? And they're like, no, I'll buy one. It's like, that's all he has to say is, have you seen the book? And they buy one, which is rad. And then Brad's like, I'll sign it for you. And then after you sign it, he's like, I wrote it with this guy right here, John. You should have him sign it too, which I really did appreciate Brad doing that, which was really cool, you know. And so for like 2 hours, we like signed books and it was totally rad. So that was like a highlight of my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I fucking love that, man. You deserve that. It's so cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thank you. And then Circle Jerks played. Hallie and Em, do you think Circle Jerks were cool, awesome, or bad?
Awesome.
Awesome.
Amazing. Like I was pretty sure they were going to be rad.
You didn't give amazing as one of our choices.
No. like there's technically three Circle Jerks live albums. There's two ones that are readily available: Gig and Live at the House of Blues. Live at the House of Blues is the best one. They sound phenomenal. They sounded better than Live at the House of Blues. Like, they basically did the Circle Jerks live set, which is about the same. But it's the first two albums and the hits afterwards, and they were just so amazing, so good. Keith is the man. And then after that, let's see, what did I do after that? So I left that. And then am I going on too long?
No, I mean, okay. No, I'm happy to hear about all of it.
So then I went down to the Fremont Country Club right across the street from El Cortez because it was DFL. And I know Monty was kind of nervous. And I, that's, you know, I run down there because it's DFL opening a band called Gallicus H2O Madball, you know. And honestly, DFL is not like a H2O or Madball kind of band. They're kind of more of an old school punk band, but it's a good pairing, frankly. So I go in and I'm waiting around. The cool thing about the Fremont Country Club is they've got a curtain that only opens when the band starts to play and closes when the band is done playing, which is kind of a cool thing, you know. And so I'm sitting there and the curtain opens up and I've never seen DFL live before. And DFL says, hey, we're DFL. And the singer Crazy Tom is there and Monty's there and the two new guys are there. And DFL destroyed. Like, they only had like a 15-minute set. And they were like just slamming 1 minute song after 1 minute song. They were on fire. Monty was just busting out crazy riffs. And honestly, Crazy Tom is an amazing frontman. I've never seen, like, he's an amazing frontman. The crowd was full up, basically. And because I know Monty was never, no one's going to be there. It was basically a full crowd. The crowd was into it. They were singing along to every lyric. It was awesome. After the set was over, actually, Tom did a very smart thing. Is some people can wear their own band's clothes and some can't. Like, it's just your personality. Tom does, and it works for him. He comes out and he's wearing a DFL sweatshirt. He takes it off after the first song. After the last song is over and they're kind of like doing feedback, he puts the sweatshirt back on and turns around and like points to the back of the sweatshirt, almost like we're the DFL gang. That's a great thing to do that other bands should do if they can figure out how to do it, because not only does it like let everyone see that it's DFL, which, you know, hey, we're DFL isn't quite the same as seeing the logo. But it doesn't seem like he's advertising. He's like, yeah, we're DFL, but it's the last thing people see, and they see the logo, and they're like, that's the DFL logo. So it was like a really effective tool, you know. But after that set, I heard some guys say that right there was the best set of punk rock bowling. So it was like I was so I was thrilled to get to see DFL, but I was so happy that they were kind of nervous, and they rose to the challenge and totally destroyed. They destroyed. It was awesome. So then I ran from the Fremont Country Club back up to the Citric desk to see who? Crazy and the Brains. And some things are public, some things aren't. I will do the public things. It's been a very emotional tour for Crazy and the Brains. Lead singer Chris, his dad passed away quite sadly about 7 days before the set. Like literally, oh, like man. A week before or even less. I'm not even, you know, and that's public. So that's like super. I mean, it's tragic. It's tragic. You know, what can you say? It's tragic. Another member, and I got to be vague here. He got some life changing news. It's not the example I'm going to give, but it's on the scale that I'm going to give. The example would be, you think your dad's a plumber, but it turns out that he works for the CIA. Like, that's the scale of news that he got just before tour. You know what I mean? That's not what happened, but that's scale. You know what I mean? And then also the van broke down 4 times between Jersey City and Las Vegas. And so like they were pretty rad, like they were happy to be there, but you know, I could tell some people were sad and stuff. And Crazy Net Brains came out and they funneled that emotion into a wild, crazy, awesome set. And honestly, like you know, Crazy in the Brain has been around a little while now, and I always type in Punk News, and, you know, the comments, which we shouldn't talk about anymore, saying Crazy in the Brain sucked, blah, blah, blah. That's not what the audience thought. The 300 people there were into it, and a lot of them even knew the words. Like, they were into it, you know, which was so rad. Crazy in the Brain were definitely one of the standouts, and they were awesome. I kind of made the bad call here, I think, is that the pool party, you know, the younger people are there, everyone's having a good time. I bailed out because it was the Laura Jane Gray show, and I kind of didn't want to stick around. I probably should have stuck around anyways, just because, you know, people love, and like, the pool party is a great vibe. Instead, I went to see MDC, who are awesome, who are also cool. MDC were playing the Nerd Bar, which is actually right next to where Elvis marries you on the old strip. And MDC was awesome, but that's kind of the older punks crew. They played, you know, they played a ton of songs. Dave Dicker is awesome, and MDC ruled. The next morning I woke up and I went to the Black Dahlia brunch, which is one of the other cool things. Like, Punk Rock Bowling does have so many. I'm not getting paid by Punk Rock Bowling, frankly, people. but most people aren't. That being said, they have a lot of cool side events. So I went to the Black Dahlia brunch, and honestly, I'm feeling like Mr. Big Shot, and I'm trying not. I realize I'm not famous. I realize no one knows who I am. But it was really cool to have people sign the book, to get a shout out from the stage of Leftover Crack, to have the LA book release party, you know, to get that show in with Monty, you know, I'm feeling on top of the, like, I'm feeling like I'm Mr. Big Shot, even though I know I'm not, but I'm just enjoying it without trying to, like, get a false vision of myself. So I'm waiting in line at the Black Dahlia brunch, and I got there at about 10:50, but it's a normal brunch place. So basically, like unless you get there at like 9 a.m., you're just going to be waiting in line the whole time. And well, actually, never mind. So I get a really good seat at the Black Dahlia brunch. I'm sitting right next to Black Dahlia, and he does a three hour set, which you would think would be like way too long, but Black is probably the only guy that can pull it off. He did dwarf stuff. He did like kind of like not like stand up, but like jokes between some songs. He did some new stuff by his new character called Ralph Champagne. He did some solo stuff. It was hilarious. The people were into it, and I got delicious pancakes. After the first hour, Josh Fries comes in. Josh Fries drums on some Dwarves records. He's not in the Dwarves, but he and Black are friends, and he's a great drummer and a great producer. He comes in. Enmore, who does Josh Fries have with him? What other band is Josh Fries drumming?
Oh, I know this. There's so many. Like, that's the thing.
Devo. So who does Josh Fries show up with?
Mark
Mothersbaugh of Devo. Where does Josh Fries and Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo sit? At my table.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I had an icebreaker because I interviewed Mark Mothersbaugh 7 years ago for Rolling Stone. And so I said, Mark, I interviewed you once for Rolling Stone. He's like, I remember that. You trashed me. I'm like, no, I didn't, Mark. No, I didn't. And he goes, I'm just testing you. And so we didn't like bro down for 2 hours, but we had, you know, conversation between, you know, here and there for 2 hours, which is totally rad. Mark Mothersbaugh.
John. Ah, so cool. Okay, keep going. Sorry.
So Mark Mothersbaugh is a wonderful I think he's weirder than he used to be, which is like he kept taking like these 1 second videos on his phone for some reason. And he had a Bloody Mary and he was trying to balance it on Black Daddy's monitor, which was like triangle shaped, so it kept like falling down. At another party, he got up and tried to turn off like the TV, which I didn't even notice on. You know, he's trying to turn off the TV. Then while Black Daddy's performing, he like gets on his back and starts crawling across the stage, like filming Black Daddy. It was surreal and awesome. And also, I'm really happy, like, for Black Dahlia, like, Devo is the band. And I think that's why Josh Fries bought Mark to the – and honestly, Mark was, like, really enjoying it. Like, Mark's like, oh, this is great. Like, he was, like, really into it. Like, I think Mark Mothersbaugh is just a man, and he just loves art. There's any number of famous punk bands we can name, but they don't really give a shit about, like, even music. Like, they're just over it, which I understand. You know what I mean? I do understand. But, like, Mark Mothersbaugh is into art, famous or not famous. You know what I mean? And he actually, like, he emptied a cup and he put it in front of Black Dahlia, like a tip cup. And then he wrote something on a dollar bill and put it in the cup. You know what I mean? And you know, Black is Black the Ripper, so he's not going to, like, fanboy. But I could tell, like, Black was thrilled because to him, like, Devo is the band. You know what I mean?
Come on. That would be so exciting.
So that was – and Mark Mothersbaugh, weird but cool as hell. Just a nice guy And there's a reason why Devo is so great. And Mark is one of those many reasons, you know. So then I ran over to the main festival. It was Crazy in the Brains on the side stage. There was probably, I don't know, 3,000 people there. Crazy in the Brains rocked it again. They destroyed it. Even though they literally had a 15-minute set, you know, which is pretty short, you know. But they rocked it. People were into it. Then I caught MDC again. MDC was awesome again. Then I caught All was very good. I'm not a huge fan of All, but it was a good set. Then I saw English Beat. I got to say, man, cool. A little bit of a letdown. They only did like seven songs. And I mean, it sounded good, but the songs were kind of slow. And maybe I just don't know enough about the English Beat. I mean, I've got the first two albums, but like it was cool. But people were surprised that it ended at like 10 minutes before the set time. And at Punk Rock Blowing, the set times are very precise. Because I mean, look, English Beat, 7:10 to 7:40. Then English Beat, 7:10 to 7:40. Then Lunatic, 7:45 to 8:30. Then Municipal Waste, 8:35 to 9:10. So the sets are extremely close, you know. So bands, and they only have like 20 or 30 minutes. So bands like maximize their set. English Beat sounded really good, but it just didn't seem like enough. Maybe it was me. Well, you know, maybe they didn't realize they had 10 more minutes. I don't know, you know.
Their time slot was only a half hour, and they didn't even play for that full half hour.
Yeah, probably about 22 minutes. They only played like six or seven songs.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that seems kind of weak to me. I mean, I agree with the like kind of leave them wanting more theory of.
But they left us wanting more.
Yeah, but like that's especially what if people have traveled to see your band? You know what I mean? Like with a band like English Beat, you know. I don't know. I could see where maybe someone would be like, oh, man, I've got to see this band. I'm going to this festival. Maybe even the rest of the music isn't totally your thing, because it's not like English Beat sounds like all the other bands playing this festival. So, yeah, I don't know. I think you fill up your damn time slot, you know, especially if it's a half hour long. No one's asking that much of you.
Yeah, I hate it. I was surprised, and so were a lot of people. But they didn't sound – they sounded good. It was just very short, you know.
Yeah.
Lunatics played again. Lunatics were amazing, and they rocked the whole place. Like, people were definitely wowed by Lunatics. And then the headliners of the evening, Devo. You guys think they were good, great, or phenomenal?
Phenomenal.
I'm gonna be so disappointed if it's not phenomenal.
Well, unfortunately, it was beyond phenomenal. It was look, like, honestly, I thought it might not be that good, because they're getting up there. It's very much a show, in that this happens here, that happens there. Which can work if you do it well, you know. Like Kiss is a show and it sucks. You know, Alice Cooper is a show and it's awesome. You know, Devo, they opened up with like I know the first four Devo albums. I don't know like the late 80s and 90s stuff too well. They opened up with like two or three songs that I didn't know that well, and then after that it was just the hits. And they had a big video screen behind them. They had at one point they all had on ape masks and were like playing as apes, which was like really cool. They had the nuclear waste suits on, and they did a song about being damaged or whatever. So they like kind of half tore off their nuclear waste. So they looked like they were like from like the future or something, and like a damaged future. They sounded great. They did the Devo dance where they kind of like lined up and stuff. They had a lot of synth parts and stuff, and it was amazing. I'm so glad. Devo was astoundingly good. Circle Jerk were astoundingly good. The headliners this year, on point for sure. Amazing, amazing headliners. So then after Devo, I ran out and saw, the Slackers. Yeah. And the Slackers were awesome. I did something between that, though. What did I do between Devo and the Slackers? Can't remember. That's Punk Rock Boing for you. So I went and saw the Slackers, and the Slackers were just a great – well, you guys – you know, the Slackers are kind of easy grooving, easy going, amazing sounding. Do you guys think the last thing you see at Punk Rock Boing should be like the explosive crazy thing, or kind of the easy grooving enjoyable thing at the pool deck, mind you?
I don't know. I think kind of to end a festival on kind of a mellow note could be good. But I don't know because by then you're always a little burnt, right? You're like, I think you're a little bit like your white flag is going up. You're like kind of happy when you see a band that's like actually going to allow you to just kind of relax for a second.
Well, this, you know, I'm on the fence myself because I kind of want to end with a huge bang, except for, you know, you're on the pool deck. Everyone's having a good time. The Slackers in formation error, one and one. You know, it's like it's just super chilled out, and it was awesome. Slackers are great. I probably got about 12 hours the entire 3 days of sleep. You know what I mean? Total. And then the next morning I went to the airport and I'm floating on a cloud. I'm in a great mood. I'm waiting in line at the airport. You know, they only had like three of the six like TSA things open, which I didn't. I'm just happy. You know what I mean? I'm just enjoying myself. I think this dude in front of me cut in line, but I'm not sure. So I didn't say anything. And I'm like, whatever. You know what I mean? But then he starts talking to me. He's like, they really could be working harder. And I just kind of like shrugged and, you know, like, yeah. Because honestly, like, too many people in this world don't understand leverage. And in this situation, we have no leverage. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not looking to cause a ruckus in the TSA. You know what I mean? Like, if they got one thing open, I'm saying, that's great, boys. Good job. You know? And then he said to me louder, he's like, they could open up the other ones, couldn't they? And I just kind of shrugged my shoulder. You know? And then, like, I'm clearly not, like, responding. The dude's kind of goofy. You know? I'm not, like, responding to the guy. And he looks at me and he goes, you look tired. Which, if you say that to a man, like, who gives a shit? But you should never say that to a woman. But, like, for some reason, I'm like really annoyed with this guy, so I just give him the death stare. You know what I mean? Then he says to me again, "I said you look tired." So I like tilt my head and give him the mega death stare. You know? Then he leans in closer to me. I say, "Yo, don't get close to me." And he's like, "I'm just trying to have a conversation." Don't. Like before he can even finish it, I just say, "Don't." And he like backs off and he's like freaked out. So I don't know if I got an anger problem or not. I mean, I should be happy. I people are just hassling me. You know what I mean? Like I'm minding my own business. You know, listen to the new Colleen Green record. You know what I mean? Like, you know, and this dude's like hassling me at the airport. Like I am tired. You know, but I'm over the moon. And this dude's hassling me. So I don't know. I don't know if I got an anger problem or not. But I had an amazing time despite my three weird explosive anger issues, which I usually don't have. So I don't know, man. That was my
I do love your use of the word goofy just to describe these people that are really like basically just a-holes. But I really appreciate the use of the word goofy. It's like I think I need to adopt that.
You just like look at somebody and like you can tell something's off about them. You know what I mean? It's like, like why are you talking to me? Like, if you say to like someone like, oh man, they got great hot dogs here, and the person's like, like they don't want to talk to you. Okay, you know what I mean? And they keep talking. Yeah. You know, like, I don't know. So I don't know if I got an anger problem or not. I'm literally going to try to work on it. You know, but I don't know why I had that explosive anger when I was over. I mean, I did have a great time, and I'm still over the moon. But like. I don't know why. I'm very agitable, I guess. You know, I'm easy to agitate, you know, so I don't know.
And like tired, you know, and like tired. Like you can be super happy at all the fun you've been having and also like a little tired and a little cranky simultaneously.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
True. So anyway, people, I recommend punk rock bowling. I had an amazing time. I hope next year is half as fun. And if it is, I'm definitely going. So yeah.
I like all my friends were posting pictures of being there. It looked so fun. It was like, you know, luckily I wasn't having FOMO as much as I was having just like, man, I just can't. I'm really, really jazzed for when I can go do something like that again, you know, and especially something like that after such a long break from not seeing shows, just something like a big dumb festival like that where you just get to like bam 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 just see like all those bands and just feel like you're kind of making up for some lost time. I'm just like, oh, I'm really, really ready for something like that. So I'm just super glad you got to go.
It's a bummer to be back. I meant to say on the last night after the Slackers, I'm like, well, I'll just walk up and down the old strip one last time and drink in the party. And it is the old strip at 3 a.m. on a Sunday. It is a bummer scene. The party is literally over and it's like straight, like a few people here and there trying to keep the party going, but everyone knows the party's over. It is depressing.
Wandering around Vegas by yourself actually, I think, is like one of the most magically amazing things you can do in Vegas. I went to Vegas once with friends that like wanted to go see like a super expensive Cirque du Soleil show. And I was like, no, I'm not doing that. So the whole time they were in that show, I was just like wandering around by myself. I ended up going to some dueling pianos bar where I was basically adopted by a bachelorette party. Like, we were all like crying and like singing around the piano together. I mean, I really highly, highly recommend to people, like, if you're in Vegas, break off from the group for a bit. Just fucking see what trouble you can get into, because it really is a good town for that.
I don't gamble, I don't drink, and I don't whore, and I love Vegas, man. I love Vegas.
Me too. I don't gamble. I do love the titty shows, though, I gotta tell you. Especially if there's headdresses involved. I want, like, costumes, I want everything bedazzled, and I want headdresses, and that is, like, my shit in Vegas.
Do you think it's weird that they're topless? Because, like, you don't need to be, like, if they're going to be topless, why have all the other accoutrement? And, or if you want to do something classy with accoutrement, why are they topless? Like that's a weird disconnect that I can't put together. You know what I mean?
You think?
Yeah. I mean, there's strip clubs in Vegas, too. So, like, if that's what you want to see, go to the strip club. You know what I mean?
I know, but, yeah, I know. I guess I know what you're saying, but it's just body and funny. It's, like, a little bit more of, like, the... You know, it's like a little bit more of the burlesque-y kind of feel, yeah, right? Rather than just like an out-and-out, like, trashy, like, nasty strip club, right? It has a different vibe.
Well, let's dive into that then. So you're saying, like, strip clubs are grimy, which they, like, strip clubs are grimy. You know what I mean? So you're saying it's not grimy like a strip club, right?
No, it's like, well, it's like... I mean, it, you know, it is kind of grimy in that there's, like, titties all over the place.
Right. So,
but it's, I don't know, but it's, like, no one's getting touched. No one's being asked to give, like, a hand job in the back room. Like, I feel like those women are, like, they're not wearing tops, but, like, they're performers, right?
So then back in the day, like in the 20s and 30s, dudes would go there to see naked chicks, right? And I guess the idea was, even though it's naked girls, we still have to be class. You know what I mean? Like vaudeville or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but are dudes going there now to see naked chicks, or is everyone going to see the burlesque, and that's just a part of history that is still there that we find amusing because it's from an earlier era?
That's my attitude about it. I can't speak to why anyone else is going to those things.
We should hang out and ask dudes in, like, trench coats and hats. Like, so,
so are you here for the sequins?
Vegas, man. I'm already counting down to next. But just I hate to be like, I've been counting down to this for like the past 5 months because of the book release party. But that's a terrible way to live life, because like, you don't want to rush through your life. You know what I mean? Like, you want to, you know, like, not look forward to things too much because you want to enjoy what you have right now. You know what I mean? So cool thing about that is, like, I was only gone for 8 days. I felt like I was gone for like 4 weeks or 5 weeks. Like, it feels like I've been gone forever.
I mean, that was a lot. Also, just, I have to say, the surprising amount of detail you remembered about all that shit you did is, like, pretty impressive. You did a lot of shit.
I love punk rock bowling, and now I'm back. Although, well, listen, the dream has to end. The party has to end. If there's one thing I learned on the strip on Sunday night, the party's got to end at some point. You know what I mean? should we play a song? Should we wrap it up? Should we come back? What do you guys want to do?
Let's wrap. That was amazing. That was great. Yeah. I've found that so delightful just to hear about your adventures, especially as someone that's been just kind of like not able to do shit like that. So thank you. Thank you for taking me on your journey.
Hallie Bloom's getting updates all week long. I'm like, Hallie, guess what happened? Guess what happened? Guess what happened?
I know. I loved it. It was super, super fun.
Well, listen, people, punk rock bowling, I should stop saying that I'm slightly annoyed by punk rock bowling and then complimenting it, which is a total dick move. So I'll say punk rock bowling, amazing time. Best festival I've ever been to. I'm going next year. And listen, we'll see you next week. And reach out to podcast at punknews.org. And we'll see you next week. And then we'll talk about news. I'll play some bands that were the highlights of punk rock bowling for me. We'll see you next week. Fucking fine. Boy, you've been fucking fine. Gonna take my blood to ride.
jerk, the jerk of all trades. She can fight, she can pose, she can punch you and yo.
Thank you. the wheel, part of the puzzle, part of the game. I'm being brave, innocent, till I'm proven guilty. Deny, everything deny, everything deny, everything deny, everything.